I had seen this week that Joel Golinevsky had passed away. Now, I don't know how many of you remember his name. Joel, when we were downstairs, he would come every week. He would sit right in front on my left. He was a Harvard-educated lawyer, and he was a true Zionist. He was on the head of a number of different organizations. He used his... I'm sure you'd if you saw him, you would know exactly. You would know exactly who it is. But he was such a fine person. So the person who had posted it, I asked, you know, what happened? He said that he didn't feel well, and he went to the doctor, went checked up, did blood work, and they said he has leukemia and died 2 weeks later. Right. So we will learn today Iluy Nishmato. Again, he was one of the group, and the whole time that. Since COVID, I think he'd really stopped coming, but he would listen and he would write to me every couple of weeks. He'd write to me and have comments and questions and so on. Vayomer Moshe el bnei Yisrael ru'u kara Hashem b'shem Bitzalel ben Uri ben Hur l'mate Yehuda v'yimale oto ruach Elokim b'chochma b'tfuna u'vedat u'v'chol melacha l'chshov machshavot l'asot b'zahav u'kesef v'nechoshet. Choreshet Evin Lamalot per Choreshet Eitz Lasot Bechol Melechet Machshevet. Lahorot Natan Belibo Hu Veliav Ben Achisamach Lamatei Dan. Milei Otam Chachmat Lev. So what's interesting here is that when it comes to Bezalel, we get like the full gambit of capabilities, of blessings. If you noticed, you have Chachma, Bina, and Dat, which is right standing there, but it's more than that. It's Lachshov Machshavot, Lasot Pesach, which means it's not just this capability, but on top of everything else, Ularot Natan Belibo. And if you look at some of the commentaries, you'll come to the realization that we're dealing with abilities which are given by God. You're dealing with prophecy. You're dealing with understanding, which is all, you know, quite incredible. But then again, it adds in at the end, Ve'oliav ben Achisamach, which itself is an interesting name. You see the Ohel Liav there, and you hear Achisamach. He's going to help his brother, as it were. So you see something over there. But I want to stay with Bezalel for just a moment. One. And we're going to see some of this later on, and some of it's going to be quite confusing. First, I'm just going to tell you what Rashi says. And what Rashi says, he knows because Chazal say it. How you then trace it down and figure it out in terms, I don't want to say on a factual basis, I want to say on a pshat basis, it becomes a little bit more challenging. Almost every time Chor is mentioned, Rashi tells us that Chor is the son of Miriam. Now, I just have a simple question. How exactly does he know that? I mean, where does that come from? So that itself is going to be a challenge. So let's leave that for a moment. But what that would say to us is that Bezalel is somebody who comes from the tribe of Yehuda, and we know that Yehuda is a very important tribe. I know some of you will tell me they're all important tribes, but okay, you have important and you have more important, and Yehuda is a very central tribe. And if I had to go back and the first time that we see the significance of Yehuda, most likely the first time will be very subtle. It's Yehuda ve'echav. It's right back in Sefer Bereishit with Yehuda and his brothers. That moment already you realize that there is leadership. Yehuda's taking responsibility. And that gets fully articulated by Yaakov on his deathbed when he says that leadership, kingship will go to Yehuda. And that verse I have a little later on, source number two. Yehuda, ata yuducha achecha, yadcha ba'orif ayvecha, yishtachu v'lecha b'nei avicha. So you have this, that the brothers are going to know, and the enemies, he's going to, you know, clutch them, their necks, as it were. His sons of his father will bow down to him. Gur aryeh Yehuda, Yehuda is compared to a lion. Terif b'nei alita, kara ravatz ka'aryeh, olachubi miyuk menu. Lo yasur shevet mi Yehuda, the scepter will not depart from Yehuda, mechokek mi ben raglav, ad ki yavo Shiloh v'lo yikatamim, which Shiloh seems to be eschatological, times of Mashiach. That means that this, again, Malchut is Yehuda all the way till we get to the time of the Ben David that we're waiting for, sometimes called Ben Parzi, Ben David, Mashiach, and all that is right there in Yaakov's blessing. So therefore, to identify Yehuda as the leader. And you know, some of these things are going to become clearer when we get to Sefer Bamidbar, when we're going to find out that Yehuda is going to be first. Yehuda is going to be first in terms of the marching formations. Yehuda is going to be first in terms of the Nisim, when they bring the offerings for the 12 days. Right? Nachshon is going to be first. So therefore, Yehuda is, if you're going to say they're all equal, he's the equal of equals, but he's, there should have been no surprise. Now again, on a different level, I could say that capabilities, artistic capabilities, desire to donate one's time and efforts and energies and skills to God could have theoretically come from any place, and not just Jews, it could have come from any place in the world. Somebody could say, you know, I just feel this need to do something for God, and I have these capabilities, and I was blessed. But when the person is Bezalel, and the person is coming from Hur, and the person is coming from the tribe of Yehuda, so it's not just that it could come from anyone, there's something right about this. There's also something terribly wrong about this, but for this moment, there's something which is very right about this, and that is, this is Yehuda, but then we need to do something else, and then we need to consider his partner. I don't want to say his partner in crime, but his partner, and that is Dan. And again, you can't help, or from the tribe of Dan, and you can't help but note that the way the two of them were introduced was very different, because it could have said, Re'e kara Hashem b'shem, b'tzal ben Uri ben Chur l'mate Yehuda, Oliav ben Achisamach l'matei Dan. I mean, it could have been that God calls both of them and then enumerates all the capabilities with both of them. But rather, you have a very clear description of one, Bezalel. He's the leader. He's the one. He'll get the school named after him, right? He is the one with this. He's the creative genius. And then he has a right-hand man, somebody who's helping him out. And again, what's interesting are these two tribes, and that's really where I'm going to be staying with the rest of today, is these two tribes and why these two tribes. There's, first of all, complete difference between the tribes, and secondly, there is commonality between the tribes. I'll go to the commonality, but first I'll go to something which is very different. Back in source number 2, right after Yehuda was introduced, and Yehuda was given kingship, and Yehuda's a lion, and so on and so forth, in Pasuk Tet Zayin, we get to Dan. Dan, Yadin Amo, Kechad Shiftei Yisrael. So it's interesting that by Yehuda, it's lo yasor shevet mi Yehuda u'michokek mi ben ragav. Michokek is already something that legislative, it has to do with law and establishing law. And then dan yadin, now let's just notice that. It's not just that it rolls off of your tongue, dan yadin amo. It's that dan, the name, is as it were, midat hadin. And if you pause there for a moment and you look at the name Yehuda, you see yud hei vav. And it's the first and the only of the sons of Yaakov that actually has all four letters of God's name in his name. Yud, Hey, Vav, Hey are there with a Dalet at some place. But the name Yud, Hey, Vav, Hey was a name which goes more towards or Midat HaRachamim. So over here you have Dan, who is unmistakably Midat HaDin, and Dan Yadin Amo. On the other hand, you have Yehuda, who's coming from the Shem Hashem, Shem Havaya, the Shem of Rachamim. So again, going towards this distinction between the two. But then it adds Achad Shiftei Yisrael. So I didn't bother bringing you sources for this, but I can absolutely assure you that there are those who are going to say, oh, which tribe is he like? He's like Yehuda. Why? Because Yehuda is the one who's called the Mechokek. So if Yehuda is the Mechokek, and the Mechokek needs there to be more judges, who's going to be the judges? Well, the judge is going to be Dan. Dan is going to help that other right? Like Ke'achad Shiftei Yisrael. Now, he is a Shevet. So which Shevet is he compared to? So over here you have something which is interesting comparing them, but then it continues, and it says, Yehidan nachash ale derech, shififon ale orach, hanoshech ikvesus v'yipol rechvo achor l'yushutcha kivit Yashem. So I don't have to remind you, I know somehow we always get back there, that Nachash or Nechashim or serpents are not always in our tradition something which brings us happiness and joy. That, quite the opposite, that when we see a Nachash is something which represents sin, it represents death, it represents pain. And the description over here of these two tribes, one being associated with a lion and the other being associated with a serpent, they are very different. And just looking at them, again, the lion is the king, and what exactly is the Nachash? But I'm just saying is that we have room, again, to pause when we make this comparison. Again, all that I'm doing now is I'm saying, just like we have when Bezalel is being introduced, and we have, oh, there's someone else helping him from Dan, which is, sounds almost like an afterthought. We have over here Yehuda being introduced as this leader of the tribes, and then someone else is introduced, but also to help him. So I'm saying this interesting dynamic, which is taking place over here with the building of the Mishkan, is a dynamic which arguably, I want to be very careful now, because you can, of course, point out all the reasons why they're different. I mean, the fundamental difference would be is there we're talking about a legal system, we're talking about judgment, and over here we're talking about something whose very foundation should be Rachamim, and that's the Mishkan, which will help us be close to God, help God dwell in this world, as it were, help us bring offerings, which are all Midat HaRachamim. So I'm saying, actually, the appearance of Dan in a structure which is all towards Midat Rachamim is itself really interesting. But what I'm saying, the dynamic is something which we have, if we paid attention, which we'd seen before, that interest, again, it's the interesting turn of phrase, Ke'ashkad Shiftei Yisrael, and it's this judgment of Dan after Yehuda already was declared as the person, as king, who's ultimately in charge of judgment. So you have, again, a really interesting coalition of two, of Yehuda and Dan, and that's something, as I said, I want to explain a little bit more. On the other hand, right, there's always an other hand, when Moshe Rabbeinu gives the bracha for the tribes, Zota Bracha, in source number 3, when it comes to Yehuda, he says, Vizot liyuda vayomar, Shema Hashem kol Yehuda, ve'elamotu v'yenu, Yadav Ravlo, the Ezimitz Rav Tia. I mean, everything is here except what's not here. Well, one thing which is not here is not compared to a lion. But what he is, it's Yehuda in terms of his strong hand and Yadav Ravlo. But then we get to Dan, and something unexpected and interesting appears. Pasukuf Bet. Ula Dan Amar, Dan Gur Aryeh, Yizanek Mina Bashan. So at this point, when I now ask you, now that you've become educated, now when I ask you, what is the possible connection between the two? Again, I said it in two ways. I said, on the one hand, there's absolutely nothing in common between Dan and Yehuda, right? And I showed how different they are, right? Yudke Vovke, Midat Hadin, and how different they are. And one is an Achash, and one is an Aryeh. So they're all completely different until we have this gilui, right? This thing which Moshe Rabbeinu reveals to us. Oh yeah, Dan's an Aryeh. So now Dan's an Aryeh and Yehuda's an Aryeh. So Dan's an Aryeh and Yehuda's an Aryeh. So suddenly we have our lion connection, which again, I don't know if right away any of you would say, of course they're connected. They're both described as lions. Now, of course, in the background now, you now have another problem, and that would be, why does Moshe describe him as an Achash, and why does Yaakov, sorry, other way around, why does Yaakov describe Dan as an Achash, and why does Moshe describe him as an Aryeh, and what exactly is that dynamic? That's something which we still need to figure out, but so far we know this. And there's another thing. And I already alluded to it, but I didn't allude to it sufficiently. When they're in marching formation, the one that goes first is Yehuda, right? Yehuda Ya'aleh, Yehuda goes first, Yehuda leads the way, Yehuda's flanked by Yisachar and Zvulun, Yehuda marches on. But who's in the rear? Who's all the way in the rear flank at the end? And the answer to that, that's Dan. So if you look in source number 4, V'nasa degel machane b'nei Dan, ma'asef l'kol ha-machanot l'tzivotam, it's also interesting that, again, Achi Ezer over here is mentioned. When we had before, when we were introduced to the fellow from down there, it was Oyalav ben Achi Samach, and here it's Achi Ezer. So it's interesting that there is some kind of this helpful attitude that the people in Dan are naming their children. They seem to have this sense of helping others. Amishadai is also very interesting because the Midrashim who talk about Bitzalel, or actually say, hold it, should it be Bitzalel or Bitzel Shaddai? Because Bitzel Shaddai, Yitlonam Bitzel Shakai, as it were. So therefore, over here, that's also something which is interesting. So Yehuda is first, and they're last. Let's look at a couple of ways that the Mefarshim understand that. Rashi understands Masef Lekola Machanot, the one who, again, is like, it's sort of like the collector of all the camps. So we'll see that there's various levels to understand that. Rashi quotes a Talmud Yerushalmi, Lafi Shahoya Shiftel Shodan Meruba Ba'achlusin, Hayonoseya Ba'achrona, V'kol Mi Shahoya Mambeid Davar, Haya Machziro Lo. So apparently, again, two possibilities. Either Yerushalmi has a tradition, or the Yerushalmi maybe is sensing what we sense, Achi Samach, right? So what exactly does it mean, this Masef Lekola Machanot? So Rashi understands that if anybody lost anything, then they would help them. So again, that really fits in nicely with the names of the various people. They're helpers. They're helpers, so they're keeping their eyes open. They're traveling last. And, you know, they're the guy, okay, you left your sweater there, you left this, and they're the ones collecting everything. They're the lost and found. They're the traveling lost and found. So that's tradition number one. Number two, we're going to find in the Datz Kanim, by the way, if you want to channel your Briska terminology, they are collecting the Heftza, right, the objects. But if you look at source number six, the Datz Kanim, Balitosu, it myself, the Kolamachanot, Lefisha, Haya Acharon, Vakom Mishaya mit Acher, Bishil Shum Davar, Haya mit Akev Imahem, Lekach Nikor Masef, that it was the people. That it was the stragglers, the guys that kind of getting lost, people that are getting lost. So then Don is there waiting for them, and they're the ones who are, they meaning they are the rear flank, and they're taking care of all the people and making sure that they're the rear flank. And therefore, anybody who's kind of getting lost, they're protecting the people. So I'm saying, it's in both of these formulations, you have an aspect of Don, which is an articulation of Bein Adam LeChavero, either, right, interpersonal, either being the ones to find the missing things that people are leaving behind, or finding the missing people who are about to get left behind, and either way they're taking responsibility, which itself is really a nice expression of an Am Yisrael kind of thing. Again, if I had to then go further, and if I had to end right now, right, if you only needed 2 minutes of our Torah, I know it takes me 10 minutes to say 2 minutes of our Torah, but if you only, I mean, that's part of the trick. But if you had to then end this up, you can say that, yeah, that's perfect for the Mishkan, because the Mishkan is about Ahavat Chinam, and therefore Sinat Chinam destroys it. And here you have a people who are concerned about objects and people, and they want to keep things together. And by the way, all of this actually could come from a sense of justice. It could have done from Din, and therefore somebody lost something. This belongs to them, which means it's not mine. I can't pick this up. Again, you have certain people, oh, I don't know who that belongs to, and they go, you know, they want it, they want to keep it. But somebody with a really good sense of justice is going to say that, no, I have to make sure the right person gets it. I enjoy reading The Ethicist of the New York Times, not because it's ethical and not because I like to read the New York Times. It's Mamish Dama Shatoshiv, and I have not been able to use even one thing that they've written. Like, and I teach a class in ethics. I've not been able to use anything because it's so bad. And this one was bad as well. This one was bad as well. It was that somebody had passed away, and there's that they hadn't paid their credit card bill when they'd passed away, and they had the money in the account, and they could have paid them. And the credit card company approached and said, okay, we want to settle for 50%. So apparently that's the policy when they have to deal with an estate rather than deal. So the person said, hold it. Is it ethical for me to only pay 50%? You know, they would have wanted to pay their debts in full. So the ethicist in the New York Times said that, yeah, I understand that, but nonetheless, that's how they do business, so therefore only pay 50%. Mm-hmm. But I can see someone from Shevet Dan saying, no, this is the right thing. This belongs to somebody. I want to pay their debts, and especially I want to do the last will of somebody who would want to. Then I'll put a religious flavor on it. They would want to stand in front of the heavenly court saying, I don't owe anybody money. I paid all of my debts, and just because the credit card company is willing to settle, they're willing to settle because I guess a lot of people, you know, die to get out of paying. The next source, the Balaturim, source number seven. So very good. So source number seven, the Balaturim, writes, Shevet Dan al Shehayimam Pesel Micha. He's on the same place. Right, this is Perek Yud Kaf Hei in Bamidbar. He's in the same place. Shevet Dan al Shehaya Imam Pesel Micha. Now, by the way, we really need right now some ominous music in the background. I don't know, you know, what's with the OU here, why we don't have speakers and we can, you know, do this class the way that we're supposed to do it. But there really should be some ominous music right now, because he just now brought something else in, and that's Pesel Micha. Pesel Micha is not good. And we're going to come back to that more. Al Kain Ein Ish Ma'asef. Sha'anan haya polit otam. So let's just pause for a second. Is that they were out? They were, in a sense, Shevet Dan were in the rear flank, but they were not necessarily in this. But I think a second. If Anani Akavod is our source for a sukkah, these guys were kicked out of the sukkah. It's not like the sukkahs that you see sometimes, where it's a very small sukkah and the two men sit in the sukkah and all the women are outside of the sukkah, right? So they're polet min ha'anan. You didn't think about that, right? So they are not kicking those people out. So over here as well, what he's saying is, no, shanan haya polet otam. But why were they polet otam? Because they had pesel micha. So therefore, the real easy way to get kicked out of the anani akavod, and that is walk around with idolatry. So you have some traveling idolatry and you don't get to stay inside. So as I said, right now, everything just now took, we have some dark clouds that just now came in. And just now things took a turn. And then he continues and says, V'amalek harag bahim. And they were the ones that Amalek attacks because the whole, again, if you start thinking, now hold it, Amalek attacked those who were outside of the camp. Who were the ones who were outside of the camp? The ones who are outside of the camp are the ones who are not being protected by the Anan. So why aren't they protected by the Anan? But that's going to be the rear flank. No, why aren't they connected? So he just now strung together a couple of things. He did it even better than Dr. Stu did it. And that is, He threw Amalek into this. He threw the clouds into this. He threw Pesel Micha, which he weren't there, into this. And he says, "V'naflu ka'amir me'achorei kotzer ve'en masef." So I just have to pause there for a second, because as I said, we just got to a dark place. But I want you to think logically now for a second, because there's something else, which we'll see. We'll see in a moment. But I just, before we see it inside, I just want you to know that you should have all figured it out. So even though that some people feel good because they figured out the next step, the rest of you should feel inadequate right now because you haven't yet figured out the next step. And that is, when you think about the 12 tribes and you think about the encampments, and you have 3 and 3 and 3 and 3, and there is someone else also. And the someone else is the heir of Rav. Right? The heir of Rav. You know, how does the heir of Rav fit into all of this? Because the heir of Rav doesn't fit in with the tribe of Reuven or Shimon or Levi, and they keep on going. They don't fit into any of the tribes because they're not part of those tribes. So where exactly are they meant to encamp? So now you go back to this point, the Masev Kol HaMachanot, the one who kinds of, all the stragglers, all the, but it's not just that. It's all those who don't have a place to be, which means they take in everybody else. And before any of you figure all this out by yourselves, I'm going to help you, because otherwise this will come as a big surprise later. And, you know, I don't want to give big surprises. Some of you are elderly. I don't want to take the chances. And I want to do this in the right way. And that is that on the one hand, you have Yehuda. And Yehuda is Yerushalayim. And Yehuda is the Beit HaMikdash. And Yehuda is Malchut Ben David. On the other hand, you have Gush Dan. Ah. You didn't see that coming, right? You didn't see that coming. And I'm not talking about ancient history. I'm talking about today. And you have two different Israels. You have the Israel of Yerushalayim and then the Israel of Tel Aviv. And just keep all that in mind, because all of this is staring at us right now. And we weren't necessarily paying attention to it. And just remember now where we started. But on the flip side of it, and who built the Beit HaMikdash, who built the Mishkan, it was the two of them together. That's really interesting. But on the other hand, now when you start talking about Shevet Dan, and they're not Tachat Kanfei HaShchinah. Oh. I'm going to get lots of trouble for everything I say today, right? They're not, no, you're good with it. That they're not Tachat Kanfei HaShchinah. And they got a Avodah Zarah there with them. And they got Pesel Micha. And they have all kinds of, they got the Erev Rav. And they got all kinds of people that are kicked out and so on. And the reason I'm saying all of this is because I want you to understand. And unless I would have said that, then you just wouldn't kind of crawling behind me the whole time instead of saying, oh, right? I'm allowed to say this now. That's more interesting than I thought it was going to be, because this is not just something that happened a long time ago. Can we continue? And now we're going to get to what really is the central place, and now you can see it's all staring at you, and you just, the only thing you may wonder about is why you may have missed it. And that's going to be source number 8. This is Rashi describing the building of the eagle. Eagle masecha. They made an eagle, right? Kevin sheshlichu l'kur bo machshefe eruvrav she'alui mahim imitzrayim vasu b'kshafim. That they magically, the eruvrav, and I keep saying this, I'll say it again, it's always good to have eruvrav around. You can blame for everything, right? I wish I would have known this when I was young. What happened to your room? It's the Erev Rav, right? Right? It's the Erev Rav. The Erev Rav did everything. It's good to have an Erev Rav to blame. But, so first it's the Erev Rav. And can we say this uncomfortable part right now? According to Chazal, who's responsible for the Erev Rav? Moshe. So just keep that in mind. Because when it comes to national tragedies, the one who's in charge is the one who needs to take responsibility. Should I say anything else?
No.
Okay. Because, I mean, God says it according to the Midrash. Your people sinned. He goes, what do you mean your people, not my people? No, your people, because you're the one who took the Erev Rav out. That's Chazal. Chazal say that God blames Moshe for the ego. Moshe's not there. Moshe's the only guy who's not there. He goes, no, the guys that you brought out, why did you bring out the Erev Rav? As I said, it's a Midrash that Moshe actually, that God blames Moshe for this. So hold on. Maybe we'll see more about this. So we are here with the building of the eagle, and number one is the Erev Rav are responsible, but Moshe is responsible for the Erev Rav. So now, see, that also just got so much more complicated, because you have ostensibly the lowest members of that society who kicked out of the Anani HaKavod, and at the same time you have somebody who's the most important person in that study, the person who's in the Machane Shechina, the person who enters into heaven, as it were, who enters into those clouds. So I'm just saying that this wonderful dichotomy over here is something that we need to pay attention to, because it wasn't just the Yehuda and Dan dichotomy. Right now we just now met another dichotomy, and that's the Moshe and Erev Rav dichotomy, which also should be, as I said, something that we should notice. If we continue, it says, V'yeshom, remember some say, Micha hayasham. Again.
Micha?
Micha. Yes, don't ask questions. If you ask questions, then you won't understand anything. Micha was there. Sheyotze mitoch dumusei binyan, shenitma eich bo mimitzrayim. This is a great riff. Like a tartar. This is a great riff, because what they're doing is they're riffing Micha from the word nitma'ech. He says that Micha was one of the babies that was killed, which are also, we're dealing with current events, one of the babies that was killed, and it says was killed in Egypt, and actually was made into one of the bricks, and there is a whole subtext of Moshe complaining to God, how can you do such a thing? How can a fair God do this? And what do the babies do? And they must be innocent, and so on and so forth. So somehow Micha gets saved. By the way, notice who was blamed again on that. It's Moshe, again gets blamed. Micha then comes out, and it says, Micha yashem, sheyatza mitoch dmusei binyan shenitma eich bo mitzrayim, v'hoye biyado shem. And he had this magical name of God in his hands, v'tas shakatav bo Moshe alei shor. And he had that thing that Moshe had written on top of it, alei shor. By the way, we just now got to blame somebody else. Who'd we just now blame over here? Yosef. Yosef. So you say, so by the way, if you missed this is Rashi on the Cheta Ego. So talk about the blame game. Somehow we just now got to the Erev Rav, we got to Moshe, we got to Micha, and we got to Yosef. I don't know, anybody missing over here? And Aleshor, according to the Midrash, Moshe goes to look for Yosef's remains, doesn't know where he is. And then Serach Bat Asher says, oh, he's in the Nile. He takes and he writes the name of God and something, again, magical name of God. And he says, Aleshor, Aleshor. And Yosef then comes up. So it says, how does an eagle emerge? What's an eagle? It's a little shore. If you missed that. Yes, you did miss that. What am I going to do? And then it says, Aleshor. And then magically, somehow, this eagle appears. So who do we have? We have the magicians of the Erev Rav. We have, again, some want to put the focus on Micha, Yosef, Moshe. Again, by the way, yeah, Aaron. What happened to Aaron? Where's Aaron? Aaron is the one who's telling over the narrative. Oh, when it was on, it was crazy. this is what happened. By the way, talk about an excuse, right? Me, I didn't do anything. Look what took place over here. But this is such a great Rashi, because part of what you have to ask yourself is, what in the world is Rashi talking about? I mean, that's, and yes, of course, Rashi's getting this up, but what is going on? So give me a couple seconds. Vishamati shamacha nedan haya chutzla anan mishum pesel micha. That, one second. That is not in Rashi. That is a dangling source that the source got cut off from it. I know where it's from. It's from someplace else, but let's leave that. We did the Rashi. Let's look at source number 9. Source number 9 is Bereshit Rabati, Midrashim Bereshit. It goes to the Tashel Zahav, Natav HaKatav Shem, HaMifurash, V'chakak Bo Tzurat Shur, El Shem Yosef, Shetachim Rashur. So again, just trying to explain where the eagle came from. So they took some gold, and they wrote the Shem HaMifurash, and then they wrote on Ale Shor, because of Yosef, B'chor Shoro, V'tza'ak V'amar Ale Shor, and Miyad Saf Arano Shor Yosef and Natal Moshe. Amru Micha Hayasham V'Natal Atatas. And Micha, again, this kid who was saved by Moshe, who should have been killed, but he was saved by Moshe, he goes and he takes this, Ukasha Asa Aaron Oto Ma'aseh, Natal Micha Oto Tas V'Shlichu La'esh V'Amar Aleishor V'Yotso Oto Egel Mina Esh Mikoach Shem Mufrash Chakakbo. So essentially what this is saying is, Aaron is total delay tactic. Aaron, okay, give me the gold, and he throws it in, puts it all together. And then this Micha, by the way, Dan. See, we're not getting this yet, are we?
No.
It's okay. So let's go back a step to what we all do know. And that is when Moshe goes up to get the Torah, he tells the people, if you have any issues, then talk to two people. Who are the two people?
Chor
and Aaron and Chor. Aaron is his brother, and Rashi is going to tell you that Hor is his nephew. It's Miriam's son. Again, how he worked that out, I'm going to say it again, is not so simple when you read the Pesukim and Divrei Hayamim. Part of it is when you associate Miriam with one of the women who are bringing the babies, and it says, Asalahem Batim, so it says, what are the Batim? Well, maybe we'll see this inside. So it says, what are the Batim? So if it's Batei Kohuna, and Batei Leviyah, so that's Moshe and Aaron, and some say Batei Malchut, and that's David HaMelech comes. So what is David HaMelech? Comes from Miriam. Now, how David HaMelech comes from Miriam, so that, as I said, is going to be a little more challenging. Apparently, Miriam does marry somebody in the Yehuda tribe, but who, and the problem is going to be if we actually look in the Pesukim Divrei Hayamim, so give me a couple of more seconds. So what happened to Chor then? Chor was, the Gemara tells us, and Chor disappears, they never hear from him again. So Chor was murdered. So Chor is murdered. Now, this, just keep in mind now, when it comes down to building the Mishkan, his grandson Bezalel. By the way, the Gemara also has a wonderful time trying to figure out how old Bezalel is right now, and how old his father was, and how old his father was, because it's somewhat challenging over here to work out all the ages of all of them. But apparently Chor is really quite young. Bezalel is quite young. So what we have over here is you have Bezalel coming from Chor, which leads us right back to the Chet Egel. We have, on the other hand, somebody from Dan, and now you realize that Dan is the location where the heir of Rav are. Dan are the people who have Pesel Micha, though you don't know that yet. We'll see that as we move forward. And this now is a much more interesting, because here's the guy who dies al Kiddush Hashem to stop the Chet HaEgel, and here are the group of people who are doing the Chet HaEgel, and now, oh, guys, come. Let's see if you guys now can work together and build the Mishkan. By the way, that is just so much more interesting than I think we ever thought about, because you know how we thought? We were stuck on Bezalel, and we say, oh, he must have been a great artist. Maybe he went to Bezalel. Maybe he knew how to do all these things, and God gave him all these gifts. Maybe he had these gifts. And all that I did, you know what I'm really doing today, right? I'm doing a Bamidbar here in Shmot, which is like crazy. Because in Bamidbar, I always do that and follow which tribes, what are the tribal affiliation, you know, what's the history, what's the back, where is it going, and where is it leading, and I just happen to be doing it now. So just in case you didn't notice that, so now you can notice that. Tosfot Hadar Zakenim in source number 10. This is from the school of Tosfot. V'yotza Egel Nira Shitich Zahav V'yotza Bitfus V'yotza Misham Bivat Achad V'yesh Meforshim Micha Hayashim Shiyotz Mitocha Binyan Shenitma Eich B'mitzayim. Again, Micha Nitma Eich V'tzorich Pirish L'Pirish Zah. Right? This explanation needs an explanation because we don't know what's going on. L'fi Shahayu Mashki'im Tinakot Yisrael B'binyan. They would kill the babies and make them as part of the building. V'ya Moshe Mitzta'er. And Moshe was very upset. God said, I've been micromanaging and knowing which kids were being killed. And God says to Moshe, you want to test this out? Go, take the shame of Mefarash, throw it in, one kid will be saved, and let's see what happens with that kid. Lakach misham and he held on to that name of God. So as he said, the parish needed a parish, and that's the parish of the parish.
This same Micha that he's saving is the same Micha.
That's what. Come on. We always deal with the theory of conservation of Michas.
Yes, that's a long time.
Okay, you'll have more of this in source 11, also from the Balei HaTosfot. It goes along the same lines. Shmot Rabbah, source number 12. Davar Acher, Re'ei Karati B'Shem. Davar Acher, Re'ei Karati B'Shem. Uvitzalo Nikur Lo Shisha Shemot. Va'at Miachaso Bo Mishifto She Yehuda. So what do you think? It comes from Yehuda. And then it tries to work out, as I said, it went into Divrei Hayamim and tries to work out who he is, Ben Yehuda, Peretz, and so on and so on. V'achar mot chitzron b'kalev v'frata v'chi yesh adam eit ba'adam. Where it says, v'achar mot chitzron b'kalev v'frata. What does it mean, achar b'kalev? V'chi yesh adam eit ba'adam. She could have v'achar mot chitzron b'kalev. Amr Shlach Yishma v'achar mot chitzron b'kalev. Mishamet chitzron b'kalev el efrat. Zu Miriam. So in order to make this association that Miriam someone got in, they had to stick her into, she's not there. They had to call her Ephrat. By the way, they call her a bunch of other things. That's also the problem. Miriam like has eight different names over here. Zumimam Shahaya Shema Ephrat. Velamadikar Shema Kain. Shahaya Yisrael. By the way, that's why the organization to save babies is called Ephrat. It goes back because of Miriam. Miriam was somebody who was saving babies, which is really interesting because now you realize that there's this other subtext behind all of this. Shehay Yisro Parim v'Rabim al Yadeha. So Ephrat from the word Paru or Vu, which is a part of a Rachel theme, going to Yosef, naming his kid, and so on. Excellent. V'teil lo et Chur. V'Chur halid et Uri. V'Uri halid et Betzalel. Amrav Chanina ben Pazi. Ein lecha gadol mishevet Yehuda ve'ein lecha yarud mishevet Dan. So there you have the two extremes of the tribes. The greatest of tribes is Yehuda. I don't know how you want to translate yarud. Yarud is the lowest, the highest and the lowest of tribes. You're first and the last. Yerushalayim and Tel Aviv, right? That's what this midrash is saying. Shahaya min halichenot. Any of the translations I saw lichenot had to do with the shvachot. So Dan is the son of Bilha that Rachel gives to Yaakov, and then says, God has judged. Umaktiv bo b'nei Dan chushim. Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu yavov yizdavereglo shlo yu mivazimoto v'shlo yehadam ruchol gaso alav l'fisha gadu v'katun shavim l'fnei makom. So that is this great statement of equality. It's saying that God says, no, I want all people to be treated equal. It could be there's a great tribe, there's not a great tribe, but I want to create an equality, and that's why. That's why I want the two to work together, because that's what it has to be. And it's also interesting, just to go back to the trait that we saw of Dan, that they are very interested and care about equality. Now, you could be cynical and say, yeah, if you're the lowest rung, then of course, then, although somebody on the lowest rung may be not at all care about others whatsoever, but this midrash actually said what I was hinting at before, is that you have Yehuda, but we saw it; it was clear, and it also it's the lion and it's the nachash and so on. Anything else we need to say about this? There's a lot more which is interesting. Avozema speak. Divrei Hayamim is where, as I said, you could try to work all of this out. The problem is going to be that it's going to introduce the tribes. You're going to have all the layered tribes in Pasuk Aleph, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, source 13, Yudah, Yisachar, Zvulun. And then, it's also interesting, Dan, Yosef, Binyamin, Naphtali, Gad, Vasher. That's a very interesting sequence. I mean, every time the order of the tribes is different, you have to ask why. But Dan is even before Yosef here, because if you want to have the six layers, so then you should have the two Rachel, and then you should have the Bilah and Zilpah, or Zilpah and Bilah. But as I said, that's interesting. B'nai Yehuda, and it starts going through, B'nai Peretz, Chetzron, B'nai Tzron, Kluvi, and then V'ram Olidat Amid, Nadav Amid, Nadav Olidat Nachshon, Nisi B'nai Yehuda, V'nachshon Olidat Selma, V'salma Olidat Boaz. Okay, now you know where it's going. And Ovid Olidat Yishai, and then you're going to find David. So we just got to David HaMelech. That was pretty clear. Then, afterwards, V'kalev ben Chitzron, Holid, Azuva, Yishavid, V'tamat Azuva, V'kach lo Kalev et Efrat, V'tele lo et Chur, V'chur lid et Uri, V'uri lid et Betzalel. How those two lines somehow got combined together, I don't know what to tell you. I just don't know what to say. But I mean, that's actually the problem, is that Rashi says, oh yeah, that David HaMelech is coming from Hur, right? David is coming from Miriam. So I don't know exactly how a lot of this is going to be explained in source 14. It's going to be David ben Ish Ephrati. Ah, if David is an Ish Ephrati, instead of saying the obvious, he comes from a place called Ephrat. Oh, he's a descendant of that woman called Ephrat, and that's how you go back to Miriam. And the Gemara then afterwards says, but she was called Azuva, Shmamina Azuva Zu Miriam, and Miriam, as I said, she has multiple names, everyone has multiple names, and I don't know how much further to go with this, because let's see how we are here. We have a couple minutes. Okay. So, in 16, it's going to tell you that Batei Kuna Leviya Moshe Va'aron, Batei Malchut Miriam, Lefisha David Ba Miriam. So I'm going to say that again. Rashi, that's where Rashi is getting it from. Chazal say it. It's the Gemara. It's the Midrash Rabbah over here. And in 17, the Hadar Zakenim asks, how is this possible? This doesn't make any sense. And then in source 18, the Dat Zakenim of Al-Tosfot is going to try to give you an answer and explain how it does make sense. Okay, let's go to source 19, because this is where Jerry's been wanting to go to for a while. B'yamimahim, and in those days, we're in Sefer Shoftim. So now remember something. From Dan, who's the most famous Danite? Shimshon, who is a Shofet. I mean, he's a Shofet. He's a judge, but he has a very messy life. He has a very messy life. Now, of course, some of you can say, well, David has a messy life. Shlomo, they're not as messy. They're not as messy. And he's got long hair. I can imagine what his Rosh Hashiva would have said. Well, not to his face, obviously. But and he was dating. Okay, but he's from Dan. What do you want? He's from Dan. What can you do? Right? Is that now making a lot more sense? Yes. Okay. He's with the heir of Rav. He's with the Plishtim. He's with the foreign worker. He's okay. So let's go to Sefer Shoftim Perek Yudchet. B'yamimahim ein melech b'Yisrael. So who's missing now? Yehuda's missing. Exactly. Yehuda's missing. David's missing. Shlomo's missing. There is no Melech yet. Uviyomahim, Shevet Hadani, Mivakesh lo Nachalo Shevet. Kilo Nafalalo Ad Hayomahu, Betoch Shifte Yisrael Banachala. So they're stragglers. They've been the last ones to try to figure out where it is they're supposed to live. So this is Dan. Why is Dan? Because they're the last ones. Why the last ones? Because that's who they are. So then we have this really interesting collection. And we're going to skip all kinds of stuff. So now look who we're meeting up with now. So now, Har Ephraim, remember, like we said, how did Yosef get dragged into all of this? Yosef just gets dragged into this. Who else is here? So, Micha. Micha is there. And they stay there. And Pasuk Gimel, there's somebody who's Halevi. We're going to come back to the Levi a little moment. Don't get upset. Any Leviim in the room? Don't get upset over here. But let's continue. The Vayiskereinu vehi lo lekohen, that this is the guy who got a promotion. He was a Levi, and now he becomes a Kohen. That Micha made him a Kohen. Was your father a Kohen? Was your grandfather? No, no, he's a Levi. He's a Levi, and he becomes the Kohen. Let's continue. Vayomel ma'kohen l'chula shalom. But it's much worse than all this. Posek yiralef yumisham mishpacha hadani, and it tells you where they travel to. Vayelu ve'chanu b'kiret yarim b'Yehuda, and we're going to skip that again. Machane Dan. Vayivu misham har Ephraim. Vayavo ad beit Micha. So they come back to Micha. So what happens there? What do they find there? Vayomer elachehem hayadatem ki yesh bebatim ha'ela efod utrafim upesel umasecha. Those are not good things to find in a Jewish home. They find tchotchkes, but not good tchotchkes. They find bad ones. They're finding all kinds of avodah zara by Beit Micha. Vatadu matasu vayakimu lahem b'nei Dan et apesel. V'Yehonatan ben Gershom ben Menashe, who of another you a Kohenim l'shevet Hadani ad hayom galut ha'aretz. And what Chazal tell us is that there's a cover up over here, and that the Nun in Menashe is not supposed to be there. And this is Yonatan ben Gershom ben Moshe. Moshe has a son ben Gershom, and this is Moshe, and this is Moshe's family. Moshe's family who are Levium. They ever wonder, hold on, what happened to Moshe's family? Well, they got a promotion. They became Kohanim. Where did they become Kohanim? By Pesel Micha. V'yasimu lem et Pesel Micha asher asa kol yimeimot beit Elokim b'Shiloh. Which is really interesting. Shiloh, of course, is a place of Yosef, but I wanna pause now for a second. The elements over here in this whole scene is this combination of Ephraim, of Dan, of Pesel Micha. And now you have to go back and look at the Chayta Egel and say, well, where did all this come from? And then blaming Moshe for this, and Moshe gets blamed there as well because of the heir of Rav, which means it, in the Chayta Egel itself, all of you would have said, if I'm going to blame anybody, who should I blame? I should blame Aaron, right? That should have been it. And who is the hero? I should say the hero is Hur. All that I'm pointing out with everything that I'm saying today is, one, the building of the Mishkan is much more interesting than probably you thought before we started. And two, the Chayta Egel impacts the building of the Mishkan, both in terms of Bezalel and in terms of somebody from Dan. And the Chayta Egel has this projection. That's what Chazal's doing. They're projecting the Chayt of Pesel Micha coming back over here. But why would they do that? Because they see a lot of the same elements in both places. So once the elements are both places, then all you have to do is figure out how exactly to bring them together. So now that we've gotten this far, the only question is going to be is how far you want to get in source 20, because it goes on for the next three pages, which therefore my own feeling would be that I give it to you as homework and there'll be a test for the first 10 minutes of class next week.
Where is it from?
It's Rav Tzadok HaKohen from Lublin, and it's a book which is called Takanat HaShavin. Takanat HaShavin is a book about tshuva. I know a lot of you are thinking now, hold it, it's not Elul, we don't need to be thinking about tshuva. It's not Sarah, you may chew, but what are you doing? But he works on the Dan Yehuda division, and first of all, he tells us that they built the Mishkan together. One, that's one point. Two is they're both called lions, and he says that Moshe's prophecy is about the future, the Yemot HaMashiach, that Dan will become a lion. That means that Don spent a lot of time not as a lion, but Don is going to come back and Don is going to be a lion. That itself is very interesting. And that the combination of Don and Yehuda, which essentially is all of Klal Yisrael, because it's the two extremes, but the combination of Don and Yehuda is one which is going to be necessary in order for us to get to that messianic age. He says a couple of the other things along. Again, the only question is like how much should we do from this, because we're clearly going to be running out of time. But he says that the idea of Malchut, for example, he says in Messianic times we're not going to need a Melech. Why? Because we're going to have a Melech. Is that God is going to be completely manifest, so therefore Melech Malchut Malchim is manifest, so therefore Jews don't need a Melech. He goes, so what do you need a Melech and Mashiach for? He says to twist the arms of the non-Jews. Because the non-Jews are going to need a little, they may not necessarily have the same level of understanding or revelation, so therefore they're going to need the Melech in order to help them make the right decisions along the way. You know, sometimes making right decisions is not always easy. But he also tries to work a bit the difference between the Nachash and between the lion. And the lion, he said, and even he quotes zoologists along the way, and he says that lions even have a bit of compassion to them, but snakes don't. He says that the Dan Nachash aspect is one which is completely attacking, but sometimes that's what enemies need. And again, that's what a Shimshon is. It needs to attack, it needs to bring the walls down, it needs to do whatever needs to be done. And that's not necessarily the way of Yehuda. It's not necessarily how Yehuda or David. I mean, David still has the sweet eyes, the nice eyes. David still has this other capacity. And it's also interesting, David also has this creativity to him. When you think of Betzalel, yes, there's a great deal of creativity, and it manifests itself in terms of architecture, in terms of building, in terms of understanding how to use things. David also has creativity. David's a warrior, but he has creativity in terms of poetry, in terms of playing a musical instrument. And there is this other softer side of David, which really then leads you to think, okay, so when does he use the power and when does he not use the power? And as I said, Yehuda ultimately is still about Yudke Vavke and about Rachamim. Sometimes you could be the most compassionate person in the world, but sometimes when you're compassionate, you still need to face evil and to deal with evil in a particular kind of way. And not to deal with evil in that way is not a lack. It's not like you're being compassionate. It's a lack of compassion. Sometimes compassion leads you to have to make some very difficult decisions. But it says that ultimately, Dan and Yehuda are meant to come together and to work together. And that's why God puts, again, that's what Tzaddik is working on over here. That's why God puts them together there, because it would be easy to say, what are you talking about. That's Gush Dan and that's Yerushalayim. That's the Beit HaMikdash and that's, you know, the pubs and the bars and all the stuff going on over there. And this is just completely different. How can you even imagine? That's Pesel Micha and this is the Kodesh HaKadoshim. How can they work together? So he also goes along to say, no, even when they sinned, they still didn't reject Anochi. It's very interesting. They didn't reject. They thought you need something more tangible. But he tries to argue, even they know about Anochi. Even they know about Anochi, they know there's one God, and the only thing is, how exactly do you celebrate it, and how exactly do you express it, and you don't necessarily, follow the same rules, and you're not, again, underneath the Anani HaKavod, so then, now the question comes. One is, I want to remind you of something, because by the way, he actually goes into Adar at some point here. Towards the end, he goes into Adar, and he goes into Yosef, and But that'll be your reward if you actually read through the entire thing. But it's not just that they have to work together. So I want to remind you of something. We're getting very close to Chodesh Adar. We're gonna bench for the Chodesh, and we're going to soon get to Parshat Zachar. Parshat Zachar is that Amalek attacks those who are outside. That means those who get rejected. Those who are vulnerable because they're not under the Anani HaKavod, those are the ones attacked by Amalek. And we go to war for them. We go to war to defend and to protect and to get them back and to bring them back. So just realize something, that the Mohammed Amalek is an attack against evil, because those evil went against the weakest and those who were most susceptible and those who were kicked out from the Kanfei Ashkena. That's very, very interesting, and that's very important. And then when it comes time to build the Beit, to build the Mishkan, so Yehuda does this together with Dan, and the Rav Tzaddik says, yeah, it has to be that way, because we need to bring those together. And as much as, again, we saw in the Midrash, you imagine, oh, that's the best tribe, and that's the worst tribe, God is saying, stop it. That's what matters. God says, stop it. There's no best and worst over here. Everybody has roles, and we need both roles. We need Gush Dan, and we need Yerushalayim. But what do we ultimately need? We ultimately need to figure out how in the world are they going to work together. The thing about Yosef is there's going to be a Yeravam. There's going to be somebody who's going to attack Shlomo. And he's going to attack Shlomo for Shlomo taking a foreign wife. But then all kinds of mistakes are going to take place afterwards, which means that even sometimes we think that those in Yerushalayim are the holiest ones. Sometimes the ones in Yerushalayim also make mistakes. But ultimately, a Binyan Beit HaMikdash is about unity. Ultimately, Am Yisrael is about unity. Ultimately, we need to defend everybody within the camp, And even though it's those who somehow got kicked out of the camp, or pulled out of the camp, thrown out of the camp, kidnapped out of the camp, we still need to protect them. I'll just end up by saying, anybody who thinks that anything I said today has anything to do with any political situation, which may or may not exist, so that's all your imagination. But Be'ezrat Hashem, we should all understand and experience unity as we are supposed to, and that's what builds the Mishkan.